11. The first hint came with a wave of panic and sorrow, one so strong it pierced Comac's consciousness like a fine silver needle. He stood up in the cockpit, nearly knocking against Geode. Something's wrong.
We live in an imperfect universe, said Leox, who was chewing on a stick of something that smelled minty. So that's a given.
I mean, something's wrong with our people aboard the station, this moment.
Comac hurried toward the airlock. Leox was only a few steps behind. All his laid-back torpor had vanished at the first hint that Affy Hollow might be in trouble. They had only just made it into the leafy glade of the station when they were met by Nan, who was breathing hard and, for some reason, had a potted flower tucked into her pocket. Behind her, Comac could see the Mizzy hurrying toward his own people and Reef Silas emerging from the vines, his face white. Nan gasped out.
We heard this loud sound, but we didn't see... Reef's the only one who saw...
Saw what?
Comac resisted the urge to put his hands on the girl's shoulders. It would probably comfort a Padawan, but to Nan, it might come across as a threat.
Tell me.
Des is gone,
Nan whispered. Gone? What did that mean? He had traveled to another part of the station? Away from the station entirely? None of the docked ships had left. The vessel's sensors would have picked that up. Or did she mean... Affy was finally emerging from the trees near the tunnel. Leox called to her.
What's happened to Des?
We don't know.
Her voice was strangely flat, as though she was in shock, which seemed strange to Comac. The young woman hardly knew Des.
But it's not good.
Finally, Reef reached them. He brought his face slowly up to meet Comac's eyes. Everything about him radiated misery and grief. Already, Comac knew.
It has happened again. Just as it happened to Master Simix. The resonances warned me, but I did not see in time. This part of the galaxy has claimed its price.
Yet he still had to say the words.
Tell me how Des fell.
The next few minutes were a blur of details that didn't make sense. Plants as hostages? But the gist remained the same.
Helix rings, Leox said gravely. And nothing left inside? That usually means...
He trailed off as he looked sidelong at Comac. No wonder. It was a difficult thing to say aloud. But it had to be said.
Vaporized, Comac said.
It came out evenly, a logical conclusion, no more.
The likeliest explanation is that Des Rydan was vaporized instantly.
Affy had finally reached them, and somehow Comac had shocked her, as though she had been thinking of something else altogether. Affy said,
You mean he's dead?
Yes.
Comac reached out with a force, trying to find any scrap of the young Jedi's mind and spirit. He was answered with nothing but silence. It took Orla a few minutes to piece together exactly what had happened, getting her information only from the exhausted, shell-shocked Reef and Affy. Comac had already walked back through the length of the ship toward his bunk, declaring his intention to meditate. No doubt he was remembering Master Simix. Orla had her own grief to bear, but she'd always been able to put emotions aside until there was time to deal with them. Comac felt things more deeply and more immediately. His equilibrium was more difficult to maintain. Had there been anything to do, any immediate hope, Orla knew that Comac wouldn't have retreated. He, like the rest of them, would have done anything to get Des back. But there was no such hope. Nothing to do but accept that a courageous, compassionate young man had been killed.
It would have been better if he died in battle,
Orla thought,
or during a rescue mission. Then his death would at least have had meaning. This? Some malfunctioning equipment on an ancient space station? It's so arbitrary, so unfair.
So was life.
All right,
Orla said to the assembled group, taking charge in Comac's place.
Is everyone else okay? No injuries?
No,
Wreath said, which seemed untrue given that he had severely bloodshot eyes and a stripe of sunburn along his forehead. But he was upright, moving and talking, so a radiation scan could wait until later. Affy looked like she was in shock, understandably enough. The Mizzy had gone back to his own people. Nan seemed completely unaffected, though she wore a saddened expression, probably out of consideration for the feelings of those who'd known Dez longer.
That little thing's sturdier than she looks,
Orla decided.
I wonder what she's seen out here.
So nobody needs medical attention,
she said.
Okay, here's what I need you all to do. Wreath, Affy, clean yourselves up and rest for a few minutes. Nan, if you'd be good enough to explain this to the other refugees, it would be appreciated. And don't worry, that bastard with the red scarf is long gone.
Nan brightened, then realized her smile was inappropriate and squelched it.
And take these flowers back where they belong, would you? The ATs are hovering around the edge of the airlock. The last thing we need is an invasion.
I got that, said Leox, who had been standing quietly at the edge of the group.
He carefully took a small planter from Affy, who didn't look up at him once.
There are no good words to say,
Orla began.
We lost a good man and a great Jedi. We'll have to search for answers about what happened and soon. First, we owe him and ourselves a little while to reflect on who Dez Rydan was and to acknowledge his oneness with the Force.
The group broke up awkwardly, shuffling in various directions in silence. Orla put her head in one hand just long enough to take a few breaths. She couldn't allow herself the same time to reflect she'd granted Komak and Wreath, not when she had to figure out what to do with the idols. Affy took a quick shower in the vessel's tiny head, waving the wand all over. The process had become strange, as if her body were now foreign to her. It seemed to live in another galaxy entirely, one she no longer inhabited and could only watch from a great silent distance. Afterwards, she knotted her long dark brown hair back into a braid and put on a fresh coverall. Normally, this made her feel better, regardless of how she'd felt to begin with. Instead, her fingers kept finding the embroidery of the Bind Guild crest, tugging at the threads, but they never came loose. When she emerged from the head, Leox stood in the hallway waiting.
It's free,
she said dully.
Not my immediate concern. I'm more worried about you. Looks like you got run over by a stampede of Gundarks.
I went on a routine search and somebody died, she snapped. Am I supposed to throw a party?
Of course not, he said, maddeningly calm. But you've got a core of Durasteel. It takes more than that to knock you flat.
The Kestrel's Dive. Who would be writing about the Kestrel's Dive? Affy kept turning that over in her head. She'd interpreted other symbols as ships' names before, but she must have misunderstood something, because it had looked to her as if the pilots were writing about their own ships, which had to be impossible, because otherwise it meant that her parents had been there, on that very station. They wouldn't plot against Scover. I know they wouldn't. I hardly remember them, but I feel so sure.
I'm not going anywhere, Leox said.
What if I don't have a core of Durasteel?
Anger blazed within Affy, white hot, infusing her with renewed strength.
What if this is exactly enough to knock me flat? If I'm able to feel compassion for other people?
Leox held up his hands.
I'm not saying... Yeah, it's a hell of a thing, losing Dez. But there's more to it than that, isn't there?
No.
With that, she turned and walked away. Walking away from Leox, unfortunately, meant walking away from her cabin. It led toward the mess, though. If she grabbed a couple of nutrient bars, that might tide her over for a day or more. She could hide in her bunk, seeing no one, saying nothing. That sounded good. Affy walked into the mess to find Geode. He had more sense than to interrogate her. His silent sympathy broke through where no words ever could have.
She leaned her head against Geode's side and let the tears come. Patiently, he waited with her as she cried, for a dozen reasons and none at all. Wreath waited until everyone else was preoccupied by grief, duty, or whatever else, then assembled his equipment pack. He prepared as though for a mountain expedition with cables and clamps and double-checked his lightsaber. Nobody noticed him leave the vessel and enter the station. He had the space to himself, it seemed. After what happened to Dez, nobody from the other refugee ships had any interest in exploring further. The only sounds were the whirring and beeping of droids. The ATs were placidly mulching as though nothing had happened. To them, he supposed, nothing had. Wreath found the small planter he'd put down earlier and placed it back within his pocket. Then he eased his way into the tunnel, going step by step, mindful of his own slow, steady breathing.
"Body and spirit as one,"
whispered Master Jorah's voice in his memory. His feet landed on the lower ring with a metallic thud. If anyone else were on the station, they'd have heard him for sure. Wreath was grateful he could keep this secret for a while. He found the exact curve they'd taken before, found the circular door. Opening it again seemed both foolhardy and necessary. Since he knew about the helix rings, he reasoned, he could avoid setting them off. Then Wreath froze as he saw through the small slits in the door a faint, flickering light. This wasn't the burning blaze that had forced his eyes closed when Dez had been lost. It was dimmer, smaller. It was also unfamiliar, unauthorized, and severely suspect. If someone was tampering with Dez's death scene, or if it turned out that this wasn't Dez's death scene... With one hand on his lightsaber, Wreath slowly pushed open the door until he heard a blood-curdling scream. A small figure scrambled back through the tunnel.
"Get away from... Wreath?"
"Nan?" he said. She sat on the floor, heavy with relief that it was only him. "What are you doing down here on your own?"
"Investigating."
She pushed her chin forward and folded her arms.
"Since everyone else seems like they're ready to write Dez off as dead, when there's no body,
no proof, nothing." Relief eased him and he sat down beside her. "I thought I was the only one who wasn't ready to accept it." Nan measured him with a look and apparently found him more interesting than before.
"Okay, so at least some of you Jedi can think for yourselves."
Wreath didn't think there was any shortage of that, really, but there would be time later to talk to her about the traditions of dissent within the Order. "What have you found so far?"
"Just got here, really. Where should we start?"
"We move forward through the tunnels, watching out for the rings and see if we can find evidence of what this area was used for. Knowing its purpose might give us some answers. Maybe Dez was transported somewhere else or taken farther down to an even lower level than we've found yet."
"That's more or less what I was thinking."
Nan got to her feet. She seemed to have been studying the ring's fastenings at the floor level, but to no avail.
"Let's move."
The tunnels stretched into what seemed like an infinite darkness. Wreath kept his glow rod ready, as did Nan, but the sound of their footsteps echoing into the unknown got undeniably creepy after a while. To break the silence, he said, "How did you come to be Hague's ward? If it's upsetting..."
"A person's growing up without their parents, and you wonder if it's upsetting?"
But Nan seemed more amused than offended. "Sorry. I realize that parents are important, but Jedi are raised in the temples together from early childhood. They take most of us in when we're only toddlers, and that's all we've ever known. So I don't assume people come from families. Maybe I should." Nan shrugged. Her long ponytail fell over one shoulder, framing her round face as though the shadows that surrounded them had draped themselves over her. She'd carried the blue streaks in her hair through to the ends.
"It's okay. My parents died well. They did their duty."
Had they been military? Wreath decided the subject was too sensitive to pry for more information.
"That was about 2 years ago,"
she continued.
Hig was already a family friend. He may only be in charge of a small ship these days, but once, he was a brilliant commander. When he offered to foster me, I thought, great. This way, I'll get to learn from the best.
Your parents probably would have liked that part, Wreath offered. Right?
Yeah, they would have loved that part. My dad always said Hig was as good a strategist as he'd ever known.
Definitely military, Wreath decided. He wondered whether their home planet was a strongly militaristic one, or whether Nan and Hig were part of a smaller subculture. The sociological ramifications would be ripe for study, if that were the kind of thing he still got to do, which it wasn't. Another turn in the tunnel brought their glow rods to bear on a second door, this one far larger than the first. No slits or windows, just black, forbidding metal. They exchanged glances, then hurried forward to investigate. Control panel, he murmured as he checked it out. Patterns of interlocking circles suggested functions, which led him hazard a guess. Unfamiliar configuration, but this looks more like it's for maintenance rather than primary programming.
I agree, Nan said. It's not what you'd call user-friendly.
While Wreath couldn't read the unusual symbols etched on the panel, the lack of colorful sections or a larger screen definitely suggested that it wasn't for general use. It was a place for service workers to double-check settings, that kind of thing. This indicated that people wouldn't normally travel through the tunnels on foot. What drew his attention next was the thick plating around the edges of the door.
Does that look like an airlock to you? 100%.
Nan took a deep breath.
On the other side of that door is the void. You can feel the chill in the air.
It was true. Wreath had already begun shivering.
To me, this looks like it was once a launching station for smaller transit pods.
The rings probably powered the pods to leave the station. Their own engines would kick in once they'd cleared the airlocks. Nan hugged herself.
And Dez got in without a starship, but the tunnels launched him anyway.
The hope had been to prove that the rings hadn't instantly disintegrated Dez. Now Wreath had to pray that they had. The alternative was that Dez had been flung forward at bone-crushing speed and then ejected into the vacuum of space. He knew from research that death took longer in outer space than most people realized, up to 15 seconds to lose consciousness. Not a long period in any absolute measure, but an excruciating amount of time to suffer the hopelessness of mortal terror. And if Dez hadn't been able to exhale, then he would have endured the oxygen expanding within his lungs until they ruptured. Wreath closed his eyes. All he could do was bear a kind of witness to that suffering.
Are we done here?
Nan said very quietly. Yeah, we're done.
As they emerged from the tunnels, Wreath heard the sounds of celebration? That sounded so wrong right then. He and Nan shared a look, and he could see that her consternation matched his own. The two of them hurried toward the airlocks, where the Arinkans and the Mizzi were chuckling and clapping hands on one another's backs. Leox stood nearby, his expression more solemn, but not unhappy.
"What's going on?" Wreath asked.
"Looks like our time on this depository of strangeness is coming to an end," Leox said. "The galaxy at large just got a communique from the Chancellor of the Republic."
Nan lit up.
"Is hyperspace cleared? We can travel again?"
"Travel's still limited," Leox sighed. "But there's an open channel to Coruscant. The senior Jedi have decided it's time to go back home."